Six Books. Nine prison coolings for the DS-106. Good spell.
Can I hear you, Mariana?
Hello! I was just going to type.
I can hear you. We're live.
I was going to just type. I can hear you.
We're live now, so...
Okay, we're live. Hello, everyone!
Yeah. So, welcome to the DS-106 Good Spell, fussing splendidly since 2013 on DS-106 Radio for Life. One of 106 bullets, mantras and koans, if you would, that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me, as usual, is Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Hello, John. Good evening. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Yeah, I'm just going to just... I forgot to send this wee tweet out, so I'm just going to tweet out to our million listeners.
Rochelle beat you to it.
Yeah. Well done, Rochelle. Yeah. Though I think beating me to any attempt at organisation isn't really a giant plus. But... we're kind of touching on that today, this I don't know, performance and things. And your bullet for this week is a quote from John Gielgud, who said about acting, "Don't be too attached to your success or your failures, accept them both and move on." And I'm thinking this probably very much touches on a lot of your interests as a psychologist and Buddhist, really.
I always remember that quote. It was an interview, and it, you know, sometimes you see these things that kind of have a big impact, and you know, you remember for a long time. Mm. I always remember this at a time when I didn't really understand it. If that makes any sense, at a time when it seemed significant, but I didn't get it. You know, how could it be that you shouldn't be attached to your success, or you shouldn't be really unhappy about your failures? You know, it just didn't seem to make sense. But I always remembered it, and it's interesting how, you know, over the years, of course, you start to unpack, I guess, your life strategy, and how, you know, things that maybe you heard in the past but didn't understand become clear and become kind of more of a part of how we do life. And I think in this is something that we do. I put it as a bullet for the DS-106 experience, because I think it's a wonderful, DS-106 is a wonderful way of exploring this idea and what it means to one's well-being and to one's ability to create when we have that capacity of non-attachment.
Yeah, I think I'd probably have to work quite a lot on that, because I start something, I'm usually pretty attached to it, and I think I go through periods if I'm making something or creating something or writing even a blog post, that I go through periods when I'm making it that I actually think it's great and I'm just the best thing I've ever done, and I'm really focused on it and very excited, and I would say fully attached. I guess reality usually kicks that out of you. Once it's out there, and it drifts by in the flotsam and jetsam of the internet. So
you were saying, I think it's connected. You were saying about this gift that suddenly has taken a life of its own, that you, one of yours on Tumblr.
It's not a huge bump, but a gift I made about, I think, in January 2014, because I just looked it up. Which was reblogged like my usual from my sort of stuff about six times, and then yesterday it just started getting a bit of attention, and I presume all that's happened is it's been picked up by somebody who's followed by a lot of people on Tumblr, and it's had about 100 reposts and things in the last day, and I usually get quite excited about that until I actually start following it up, and you realise that most people that are posting these things are also posting about 56 things an hour. They're really, you know, people just seem to use Tumblr like just real fast. You know, they're collecting vast quantities of stuff and just broadcasting it. Madly, it's quite a different type of site than than say a blog or something. That when you think about that, you know, I think of my blog as something quite important to myself, and you know, all the rest of it, and I remember most of the posts. But these people are posting millions of things, and I'm presuming they're not very attached to them, because just seeing nice things and firing them out there.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. And then they forget about it 2 minutes later. I guess that's true. Not much attachment there.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, generally, I mean, I think twice last year I was on the radar in Tumblr, which meant that one or two things got a huge number for me of quotes, and again I got very excited, but then when I thought about it, I realised that actually it wasn't like the best thing I'd ever done or anything like that, and I would have, if it was up to me, I wanted something to get a lot of notice, I would have chosen something else. So I guess I shouldn't be attached to the success and failure of my animated GIFs.
Well, I suppose where this is significant in the context of what I think, you know, John Gielgud would have meant, which was kind of advice to new actors. I guess in that context, it's less about attachment once it's out there and what it means to you, but it's more about our willingness to take risks and to experiment and to go, okay, I am going to make this, and I am going to say this, and I am going to do this thing, even though I don't, you know, it might make me look bad, or it might not be, you know, they might find out something about me that I don't want them to find out. Like, you know, I often think that I'm going to confess now. I often think that when I pick moments in movies or in things, you know, when we're doing the animated GIFs, because I guess both you and I do a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you pick something that, you know, effectively it's saying, this matters to me, I like this, like your like, for example, you know, if I was picking something for you, I would be looking at, you know, that Blade Runner moment when they show that the city on fire and so on, because you know it's something that you use a lot, that we know you love. Yeah. And if people are following you online, or they're friends, or they, you know, they're part of your network of people, they will know all those things. What are the things you like? Probably better than you do, to be fair, because they'll see similarities. They'll see certain things that you pick in a given movie or in a given TV series, etc. And I often think about that. You know, it's like, what? It's this whole thing about your digital identity and your mediated self. What does it say as you kind of go, oh, that's a nice thing? And often you don't stop to wonder why. You just pick it, kind of like the Tumblr thing.
Yeah, so... yeah, that's amazing. That's... I'm like, yeah... if you're sort of making a curation... And it's going to reveal quite a lot about you, which is slightly worrying, I suppose.
You're not too attached to what it says, and you just take what you know. I suppose it's the idea of a mediated self that keeps recreating itself rather than being stable. Because if you think about it as, you know, it's my identity, it's who I am, in a kind of reified and object kind of way, then I suppose it's out there, everybody can see it. But I suppose one of the things that I think the internet is good at doing is at showing the kind of constant flux and evolution of that, because what you post today isn't what you posted 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so... if you were to review your work, you probably would see a progression or something that would, you know, so hopefully it would be a sense of flux rather than rigidity, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you look back at different bits of your life, and if you have been blogging for a while, you can see yourself as being quite a different character at different points. Maybe not in... always, but you know, the things that you focused on and the things you thought were important, maybe you're not looking at now, and your point of view changes, and yeah, that's quite nice to see. I mean, I think that's one of the main reasons, or one of a good reason for doing blogs.
Well, this is just a silly example, but somebody I don't really know, I've just met on Twitter, and we've been talking a little bit, you know, and I don't even know his name because he just goes by Jay-Z, Zed in on Twitter, and he's been wanting to learn animated GIFs, and anyway, so I sent him some resources, and as part of that, I looked at the first tutorial that I followed, that was one of Michael Brunson Smith's one, to actually get to a GIF, because I tried and failed miserably at the beginning. And so I thought, well, I'll send him, it's a terrible one, and I thought, you know, I would send it to him so that he could see that, you know, they don't all have to be, you know, singing and dancing, that you have to start somewhere. And and I saw it, I watched, you know, you kind of watch it, and you start to see all the faults with it. Because you go, and but I also remember it was the very first one where I succeeded all of my own, and I was over the moon. I thought it was the best thing that I had ever made.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess that's the thing about, you know, changing. You kind of take the risk, and at that time I would have gone, my God, isn't this awesome? The whole world should be reblogging this.
Yeah. I suppose you might say experiences a series of feelings like that, which are usually dashed. But this relates, I guess, to learning, in that if you get attached to something, that you'll stop looking for the next thing, or you'll stop going on to learn the next thing. You get too hung up on one particular thing, maybe.
And also, I suppose, you know, when, you know, we've talked about examples of, you know, where you think the whole world should, and, you know, nobody does. If we have that kind of sense of attachment without being able to carry it lightly, I guess that's how I would phrase it. You know, yes, you know, loving what you do and being really proud and carrying it lightly, so that, you know, when it is out there in the bigger scheme of things, where people, you know, there are inevitably going to be people that can do what you've just done better than you. If you carry it lightly, then you are not destroyed by it. You know, by the fact that nobody reblogged it, that nobody liked it, or that nobody said anything. You kind of go, well, you know, that's just what it is, and you move on. But I think if you have that sense of, unless I get the reinforcement from the outside that tells me this is good, kind of like the camel thing, I guess, that we were talking about a few weeks ago. You know, if that's the kind of driver, you won't do anything. You'll stop. We would have stopped a long time ago.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get destroyed, or you get kind of, I suppose, distraught by... quotes, nobody liked what I did. You know, and it may not even be that, you know, it may just be nobody saw it because you didn't know how to disseminate it. Or, you know, people just had too many other things that they were looking at. But I think the assumption is, when we have that sort of dependency on others must like what I do, hence you can't tolerate failure.
Yeah.
And then you walk away. And I think that's what one of the things, actually taking it back to DS-106 and learning, I think it is one of the things that makes the DS-106 not be as accessible to some people as other things, that makes sense.
Because they might put something up that's not noticed, or...?
Because they don't want to take the risk.
Because of performing in public.
Because it is a performance. If you think about it, I mean, you know, I was already in there when I realized what it was that I had signed up to. And then I went, oops, well, I either keep going or I just run away. And I decided I would keep going. But I suspect that there are, you know, that is an element of it, because... partly because, you know, we are not, it's not a kind of talking about kind of course, if we can call it that. You know, it's not about, you know, let's just talk about what other people do, let's talk about X, Y, Z, you know. We are actually doing things.
Yeah.
It's the show and tell. And also there is an implicit thing where we continually, improve what we do. And whether we like it or not, we do have a sense for quality. You know, the people within, I mean, we were talking about, you know, the people, let's take it from the perspective of, you know, animated GIFs we've been talking about, you know. There is a sense of quality. You know, I look at the, I look at my very first GIF, I look what I do now, I go, I'm good now, mate. By comparison. But, you know, there's still room for improvement. Yeah, if I look at, you know, Tokitina's GIFs, for example. Yeah,
or Andrew Forgrave's stuff is just, it's just lovely. I guess you've just got to try or just enjoy bits and pieces and not worry about it too much. I mean, I guess the important bit of DS106 is not actually learning to animate GIFs, although that it's easy to focus on that. It's learning about learning and learning all this other stuff that, that comes from that. And I think that the GIF thing and the sense of fun and all the rest of it is just something. It's partly something that helps glue classes together. And you know, when you're maybe not being motivated by intrinsic reasons, or the learning isn't that particularly interesting to yourself, but you still do it because you've got a good set of classmates and interesting leaders and all the rest of it. And I think very much sort of real time in school type learning depends on that very often.
It may not be the thing that you are, you know, it might not be your camel, the thing that you're passionate about, but somebody teaches you something, and you go, oh, you know, that because they love it, and because they are passionate, and because you can learn something, and who knows, it might become something that you are passionate about. But I don't think we just do it. I mean, I do think that those of us who like animated GIFs are a little bit addicted to the thing, but it's not just that. Is, I mean, I can think about you know, how I've learned about writing, how I've learned about web, you know, using the web to tell stories, how I've learned about all sorts of things that are about, I guess, the kind of storytelling element of DS106 that comes out of my willingness to go, okay, I'm going to give it a go.
And I think what I'm trying to maybe say is, if you take the camel, I might go on to somebody else's camel and go, you know, the extra mile, just because at the end of it I'll sit down, have a cup of coffee with people and have a really good conversation about something else. You kind of, it doesn't need to be your camel all the time, it doesn't need to be the best camel all the time. Sometimes it's other things that are in there. Some of the stuff that I've learned from DS106 is the implicit things, or the open web stuff, or the links to, you know, other people and other things.
And often the things that you do just because you want to help out somebody, and because you know part of the kind of ethos is about learning and about, you know, constantly learning and improving. There is a way in which you go, okay, well, may not be my thing, but, you know, I know something that could help, so I'll use it and contribute. And actually, that if you think over time and you look across people, there are those people, and we have people who have the different strategies. Some that kind of have their way, you know, and the thing that they focus on, and that's what they bring to the party, their thing. And others that are focused more on the you know, yes, I've got my thing, and also let me look at how else I could, you know, how I could be doing something that is outside my comfort zone, or trying out something because, you know, Rochelle asked me to sing in one of her songs, you know, so I found myself recording a song, you know, that I thought I would die before I ever did that, let alone put it public on the internet.
Yeah, I think there's some things that are a step too far.
How dare you?
I mean, I didn't mean you singing, I was thinking about things well.
But I think there is that element, isn't it? It's the sort of tension between doing your own thing, putting out there your own thing, and having, you know, and taking the space for that. And then certainly, I think in the context of DS106, we kind of always balance that with the, you know, what I guess you can put it under the heading of common love, which is this thing of, you know, look at other people's work and work with other people and learn from other people. Some of the stuff that the University of Denver people have been doing, for example, you know, has been absolutely wonderful. These people know their digital side of things. I don't know if you saw, it was Dr. Garcia's birthday yesterday.
I did not do that one, I'm afraid. I saw it, but I had a great idea for it this morning. But
you should do it as a belated. We should do a shout-out for her and wish her happy birthday. But somebody, one of the people in the University of Denver, did a creative edit. It's just beautiful, superimposing the photo that we had for the Daily Create, and he created like a kind of, you know, like a sort of Minority Report screen that just goes, you know, moves in space, you know, that sort of thing. And he's created just a sort of, you know, a beautiful thing, which is, you know, kind of a beautiful city of the future. It's just amazing.
That one, is that on the Daily Create site?
I think it might. You might find it. In fact, I should just retweet it now under quote, and I'll retweet it because it's under the 106 spell, and then you'll be able to see it, and to you and our million listeners. It's Rocky Luke can have it too, so she'll get it if she's not seen it. I just thought it was beautiful. So beautiful, you know, it really sort of stood out to me.
Oh wow, yeah. Does it mean?
It's an amazing, you know, and so I think this is the thing, isn't it? And he's made a few things. I've been kind of following him in particular because some of the things that they come from a kind of different background in a way than the University of Mary Washington and other people. They are, dare I say, that they are older and more experienced.
Well, I'm looking at that guy, and he's a designer, illustrator, and educator.
It's
coming from
So they know their stuff.
It sounds like they're post-grad almost rather than,
Exactly. So they know the kind of, their tools, and they know their, you know, they know how to use the stuff, and they're learning, I suppose, the kind of storytelling element of DS106. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting. I do follow some of them because this is just by way of saying, you know, how actually in paying attention to other people's work, one of the things that happens is, We can learn, you know, if we direct that attention, we can learn stuff that helps us. But you need to make that time. You need to direct that attention to something that actually you may not even know if it will pay any dividend later. But, you know, sometimes it does. And I guess that's kind of what we encourage, isn't it? It's just keep checking what other people are doing because you might learn something.
Yeah, oh, very, very, very much, yeah, I think.
As well as the you know, keep asking questions and asking for help if you need, you know, like the CogDog's rule. You know, any struggling with anything for any more than 30 minutes is too long.
Yeah.
Well, after 30 minutes, ask for help.
I mean, I think this thing of learning by teaching is really useful. I certainly found that. You know, every assignment in DS106 gives you the opportunity to write a tutorial for that assignment, and that I think is a way to help you understand what you know, and sometimes to figure out better ways of doing it as you're actually describing how to do it. You say, "Oh, right, you'll get something there." And the other one, I suppose, is, and Rochelle saying, by paying attention to work of others, we learn, and maybe surprised by what we learn, and sometimes sort of copying, I think. Did we talk about that last week or the week before? I can't remember, or maybe somebody else had a conversation about this, but copying stuff, you actually learn quite a lot, and I guess that's back to the camel. That's what you're doing when you're hitching onto somebody else's camel. You're very often just copying them, and that will actually teach you quite a lot. And right at school, how do you start learning things? You start really by copying a teacher. You copy, you know, an idea. And there's not I think very often copying is seen as something bad or, you know, not creative or all the rest of it. But I think
this. But actually, you can learn a lot. So, for example, I was saying about following Kirk Lunsford for the University of Denver, and I had a sort of little look to this, that, and the other, and there was one blog post, and where he talked about his process as a designer, and it completely changed. Let me just explain the background. You know how much I like kinetic typography. Mm-hmm. I have struggled in the same way as I do I have done with the animated GIFs, and I've tried to make them in all sorts of different things, and I have always failed. And I love it, and it is on my list of things to do before I die. I will learn how to do this well, and I think I might use The Prisoner for that this summer. But reading him and reading what he did, a little kinetic typography thing, is very short, but it's just beautiful. And the post is wonderful to help you, to help me at least. It helped me understand what is it that I've not been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's that kind of thing where you suddenly kind of, you think, oh, I'm going to do a nice thing and go and, you know, look at if I have a little bit of time, you know, particularly the new DS-106 people. And go and look, and you think you're doing it for them, kind of thing, and then find yourself, wow, this is really going to help me.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think there is quite a lot of that in DS-106, and we're very lucky that you know, it seems to attract the kind of people it attracts.
And maybe, I don't know if you want to mention some of the stuff that's going on, because you've been doing a bit of organizing, I believe, today.
we've got different villages we do,
yeah,
this summer on DS-106. And so there is the University of Denver, there is the stuff that's going on at the University of Mary Washington. I think there are two sessions running there, and then we have the kind of open experience where we have, I guess, two themes, and they just happen to be about two villages, but they are very different kinds of villages. So we have the next kind of episode of the Bergeron's family that we started last summer, but this year we are having a fairy tale festival. And so the whole thing about the website is that we are going to be writing fairy tales and learning about fairy tales and effectively using the fairy tales in order to learn about digital storytelling. So that's kind of up and running, and I think starts on Monday formally. And then we have Prisoner 106, which is the themed, as you know, because you've been involved in it, themed on the Prisoners TV series, that is a British TV series that was first aired in 1967, if I'm not wrong. And we're looking at the original series, but I think there is hope that we will also be looking at some of the remakes, because since 1968 there have been a couple of remakes, and I think there may even have been a movie somewhere, but I'm not sure yet of that. And so I think that's starting also formally on Monday, but we've been arriving to the village and different people, you know, I decided I wanted to participate in both. So I created myself, I got my house has a teleport button, so I shall be commuting between the two villages, because I've got special assignments on each.
I'm not sure you really get out.
You'll see, but shh, because yeah. I'm not telling anybody at the office that I've got this button. This is a secret button. Shh.
There we go. We'll keep that well under. That's the Bergeron one seems very well. You know, the weekly assignment, the weekly sort of topics and things are out there, and it's organised and ready to go. And it might be interesting for people who have not seen DS-106. It'd be a good way in, because it is, I wouldn't say formalised, because we probably never managed that, but it's timetabled at least, and the ideas are laid out, and you can get some sort of idea of the things. And even if you're not immersing yourself fully in either of these things, are quite easy to dip in and out of. And in fact, yesterday I saw just a great set of links that Rochelle put up to, and I don't know if they're all, because I got kind of caught in the Japanese fairy tale book one, but it's illustrated fairy tale books online that were open access, and I'm presuming open to Remix. And that it just looked like a great set of resources for all sorts of things.
Yes, and I do think, you know, it's what is nice about the two villages, I think, is that there is, of course, a kind of way in which part of the attraction or the wanting to get engaged has to come out of your interest in the theme for the particular DS-106 run that we're talking about. And I think this idea of the fairy tales versus the sort of dark, you know, dystopia that is the prisoner village is really quite interesting, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you've got the kind of very light and very kind of let's just talk fairy tales and learn about, so people can do a particular kind of storytelling and learn about that, and then you know, working with the prisoner and working with the village and so on, there is that kind of other element of, you know, how do you weave a story in what is a much kind of a darker kind of genre, I guess. So people can take their pick, or like me, they can see when they feel dark and when they feel light and teleport.
I think you could probably feel quite dark in some fairy tales.
There's some
interesting stuff there. You always take the first impression people get of fairy tales is, I guess, children and niceness and all the rest of it. But if you start reading some of the older ones, they really can be very, very grim.
Rochelle and I, we were talking today on G+, precisely that actually there is the potential for doing a lot of remixing and a lot of kind of, you know, really story weaving across the two villages. You know, I think she asked, you know, are the two villages close by? And I said, of course they are. We can do some, you know, some kind of weaving in and out of the two villages and stories, and who knows? I mean, we have no idea where it's going to go, really. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, there may be other people who decide to do the kind of both and rather than just one. We'll see where it goes.
So, I mean, I've only watched a few of the Prisoner episodes, but it'd be quite easy for you to imagine an episode of The Prisoner which referenced a fairy tale, because, you know, they reference different things, and, you know,
an excellent idea.
One week it's a spy story, and the next week it's a psychological story, and the next week it's some sort of hallucinatory journey. There is plenty of
Prisoner fairy tale. I'm there. I should be writing the script. Yeah. We should do it as a radio show. So you just never know.
Yeah.
Rochelle is saying something here about reading the premise of The Prisoner. I have thought about this. Some people might want to play. I might write a blog post for this. I'm not sure quite how yet. Some people might want to play kind of in the sort of way that you were talking about, where they drop in and out. I think that the fairy tale story makes it a little easier for that, because people could just like write a fairy tale or make a movie or do something. Whereas I think The Prisoner makes it a little bit harder, because you kind of need to understand the premise of the thing because of the way it's been set up, where effectively the whole thing is the story, because we're already kind of in character almost, how we interact and so on. And if people do not understand, in fact, I had a tweet from somebody who doesn't do DS-106, and I'd sent a Prisoner 106 thing asking for information and talking about The Office, and they've just gone, I have no idea what you're talking about, but it sounds interesting. Because of course, once you start talking about this kind of, you know, this sort of village where all these things happen, and, you know, and people who are, and when it goes on to the kind of, you know, the torture that goes on at the hospital, then we'll have a problem. I better warn people who might be not doing the S-106.
The X-rated horror show, or at least the horrific faces of
exactly.
The prisoner under the laser beam in the surgery.
Exactly that. So I think that it would be interesting to try and write something that could be a sort of, even if you don't want to sit down and watch all of the series, because that is the thing, people might not like it. But that shouldn't really stop you from at least kind of getting, you know, the fun of the story.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking how to write something that might be helpful for that, for doing the kind of cross-pollination, as it were. Anyway.
Awesome.
We'll see.
Yeah. You could go both ways. You could rip a series of stills or something out of The Prisoner and use them to illustrate a fairy tale, I guess, because they're... Yeah, I could see that. It's got plenty of expressions.
You've got a job, because you know you got lost last year. You never got to the Verdurans last year.
I never made it at all. It's just
you
it's
never made it, so
call.
you can make it this year with a dark fairy tale from our ancestors in Scotland. There you go.
Okay, well, I think I'll be doing something that's probably not going to be that, because, as I say, I got caught up in these Japanese fairy stories the other day, the sort of woodcut prints and things, and I'm sure there's something interesting there.
Wonderful, yes.
So I'm going to have a wee mess about with those.
Lovely,
we shall see. Yep. Anyway.
All right, we better stop now.
A good ramble. I guess I should look for something to play us out.
Yes, we didn't play anything. We just rambled today.
Oh, I didn't bump her in, did I?
No, we didn't. We didn't do anything. We just talked.
Oh well, we'll futz out then with a wee bit of this.
If at first you don't succeed, then skydiving isn't for you. But DS106 Radio might be. DS106 Radio, where futzing is an art form.
That's it.